Hello and welcome to Funny Business, the best podcast on the internet. I'm Locke.
And I'm Rob. And on today's episode, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Caleb Holstein, founder at Square X and Green Square and bringer of all energies, I reckon. He's the man.
I'm just going to put it simply. He's the man. We're working closely with him and the team there. And honestly, hearing his story and where his background with his family into business since he was a kid, working at the florist, just doing things, it made me realize that I had no entrepreneurial hustle as a kid and he was just born for it.
Yeah, no, like have a family like that who are doing interesting things and to be working weekends and from 15 running your own business and doing stuff, it's like straight up hustler.
And he loves his coffee and I do too, and I just feel like there's some energy and connection. And the beauty about their business is they all have different skill sets, all the different founders. So operate 23 hours a day, which is crazy. He goes into that in the pod, so I won't give too much away. But
also some coffee tips.
Hey, if you like your coffee, I feel like you're going to like this episode. Stick around to the end because there's a lot of tips and advice around how to make the perfect pour and the perfect coffee for yourself every morning. So enjoy the chat.
Caleb, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business Podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you? What do you do?
Thanks. Thanks for having me, boys. My name's Caleb Holstein. I'm a coffee fanatic, coffee entrepreneur. It feels weird saying that word out loud. Never really felt comfortable with that. But I've worked in coffee my entire life and that's kind of who I am and what I do, I guess, is coffee.
Coffeepreneur. See, I like that because I was looking at like podcastpreneurs and stuff and that's people when we were starting, we were like trying to find our people, you know what I mean? And it's like, I feel like you coming into the space, when did you first fall in love with coffee? Like the first smell where you're just like, oh, I might need to run to the toilet now. That's what I do every morning. I smell a coffee and I'm like, oh, that's time.
Yeah. It wasn't quite like a romantic, like I had a coffee and the world opened up and, you know, the clouds parted and everything landed for me. It turned like the way I always describe it is the coffee industry is amazing because there's no barrier to entry. You don't have to be like, you know, extremely qualified or educated to do it. So I was, I was actually working in my family business in the kitchen and realized that I was becoming really grumpy because I didn't have to stand in front of customers because I could just be out the back and be grumpy on the pots and pans and, you know, cursing away in the back of the kitchen. So I was like, my sister was like, go out the front and just, you'll have to be nice because you're in front of people. And then I just fell in love with it. I was like learning how to make coffee. Didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I just had to be nice because I was like, oh, they can see me if I get the shits. So it was, it was all a bit of a facade just to try and make myself less grumpy at work.
Man, I can't believe you're hiding back of house.
You know, yeah, that personality can't be hiding in the kitchen. You got to bring that out. Everyone, they must have saw something in you, you know.
You have front of house energy.
Too much charisma. They call it the riz, don't they? Charisma.
Charisma.
Too much riz to be in the back.
But take us back. Obviously, we know a bit about you, but like for those that listening, where'd you grow up? Did you think that you were going to be running businesses and doing things like that as a kid?
Yeah. So I'm from and still am from just north of Sydney on the Central Coast. I'm a born and bred coastie and an absolute tragic. I grew up I'm the youngest of five. So I come from a big family and my mum is like a serial entrepreneur. So she left school at 16 and started working in banks and just had an opportunity to like take over a corner store with my dad. And then ever since then, she'd opened like 20 different retail shops and businesses and just went hammer and tong. But being the youngest of five, I just grew up in the back of shops. So I grew up in the back of a florist and then it turned into there was a clothing shop, grew up in the back of that for a few years. Like you just kind of see it all happening. You don't really realize. And then also being the youngest is all my brothers and sisters have been through owning like their own businesses and small businesses over our careers. So I've owned businesses with them. I've owned businesses on my own. It was just one of those things where I realized at a pretty young age, I'm not a good employee, but I'm a pretty good business owner, I think. So at least try to be.
So like growing up in a family like that, was it more like, well, fuck it. I am going to start something. We're going to do something together. It wasn't even like a question. It was just like not an if, but when.
Like a lifestyle, yeah.
Well, it was just one of those things that just happened. Do you know what I mean? Like I just was like, it just happened. And I actually, I used to be a little bit embarrassed about like my first business story. Because it sounds like the way I always like my insecurity was like, oh, mummy gave you a business. That sounds cute. And then I had a moment a few years ago. I was like, no, like, you know, I don't know if language is allowed, but fuck it. I was like, I had a good opportunity, and it's kind of been amazing since then. So my mum had bought a cafe, and it was only because they'd run it down and it was next to one of her shops, and it just, you know, the guy ran it into the ground, and she was like, well, now I've got no customers coming into my retail shop. I'll take over the lease and try and get it back up and running. And she ran it for about 2 years with basically free labor because all of us kids worked there. And we were just pumping through it. Like, I'd go there after school, you know, every day. My brothers and sisters who had just left school, a bit older than me, were still doing stuff there. And then she realized, she's like, I hate this. Retail, like, you know, retail's heaps easier than hospitality. And I was like, you know, my older brothers and sisters were like, nah, this is like, we love this. This is amazing. So mum did a vendor finance. So she sold the business for a profit. God love her. She's a hard one, and good old Mary. So she, you know, she worked out what it had grown by, what it was worth, and set a price. But she goes, I can't sell a business to every one of you bloody kids. Here's all of you, get a share of it and figure out how to do it. So yeah, we were pretty lucky, and we just kind of sunk into it. And I was 15 at the time, so I was in high school, and pretty much the rules were, mum was like, you don't have to go to school, but if you're not at school, you're at the shop. So yeah, I got to work my ass off and grow a business. And I was heaps fortunate though, because like my older brothers and sisters, they really like took me on the ride. So I wasn't just like, oh yeah, you know, sweep the floors, get out of here kind of thing. They let me do everything. And they really, you know, like I was doing our costing, writing menus, working out our time of days and things like that for like operation hours at like 16, 17, because I liked numbers. And I was like, let's see how this works. And they had mortgages and kids, and I had, you know, a BMX and some clothes I wanted to buy or something. Like, I had no responsibilities, but yeah, they were amazing. They just gave me, they treated me like an equal kind of thing in the process, which yeah, I can't thank them enough. And now hopefully I learned some of those skills and I'm able to keep doing them with what I'm up to now.
What about your siblings and stuff? Are they still doing entrepreneurial things, or what's their pathway?
Yeah. So my eldest sister is, she works in like, it's not sports management, but she works for Central Coast Mariners in their like their marketing and the department there, getting sponsors on board and stuff. And then my other sister, she had a range of different shops, but she had like a crystal and jewelry shop. And it was hands down like the best business. All my other brothers and sisters won't like this, but it was the best business that any of us had ever run. She just like nailed this niche of selling crystals like 10 years ago. And like, it was in a small town on the Central Coast, and people would drive from all around the state to come and buy rocks. And I'm not a crystal guy, so I don't even get it. But I was like, you see with the figures she was doing and how she was pumping it. And I was just like,
you're out there charging them up after that. You're like, this is good. Hey, get out under the full moon and let's charge these crystals right up.
Mate, it was a racket. She was a weapon at that. She was really good. And then my brother, who's in the middle, he still has his own cafe. So he has another cafe now. I transitioned from being a business partner. Like, we were obviously running the cafes together. Then I got out and started roasting coffee, and I turned him into my first customer. So I started selling him coffee. But yeah, he's got an awesome cafe up on the coast here down at Avoca Beach, just charging away there, living the lifestyle. I think he's about 200 steps from the ocean, so it's not too bad. And then my youngest sister is an accountant. So she's left the small business world, and she was doing all bookkeeping for us in our businesses, and then thought, let's go get qualified and do this for everyone. And yeah, she's a machine.
Grouse, how you can just kickstart something, and then you already know you got 3 or 4 employees, you know, because you can just be like, it's a bang. Hey, I've already got 3 or 4, so there's a few shovels to hand out, you know.
Well, I'm going to get on something which I'll give Locke a bit of credit for here, which I don't like to do too often, is that people who have worked in hospo backgrounds, who've worked in with customers, in with people who have had to do the, you're there for an experience, you're there to help make their life good. We always say that those skills are so transferable to the different corporate world, business world, startup world, all the other stuff of like getting out there and actually dealing, interacting with people. How much stuff do you still think back to when you were like 15, early years starting stuff to what you do now?
Oh, like, dude, it's crucial. I'm the biggest hospitality advocate out there. Like, you will not find someone who rates hospitality skill sets as highly as I do. It might be because it's, you know, probably the only skill set I have, but it's honestly, it's so, I think it's so important. I remember my mum saying something to me when I was really young. She was like, you know, I was always like, oh, I'd love to travel, or I'd love to, you know, have freedom to go around the world, or, you know, get out as soon as I could. And she goes, and this is the most crass thing ever, but I absolutely love it. She goes, everyone in the world eats and everyone shits. So as long as you either be a plumber or learn how to cook and serve people and make them happy. And I thought, well, I don't want to do the other one. So let's learn how to cook food. And it's one of those things, like, as soon as you interact with anyone, or even now in like what I'm doing in my career with like startups and all the other jazz, is I reckon I could pick someone out of a room who's worked in hospitality. Cause it's like, they just have there's an understanding of like an interaction with someone and actually listening, actively listening to what they need and actually being able to then like respond to people really dynamically. Yeah, there's something about the hospitality work ethic and that extra get up and go that, yeah, I think is so useful in other workforces and stuff.
That's when I didn't know what to do with my career or life. I remember coming back from Canada and I was like doing all the, you know, like being a lifty and just doing all that sort of life. And it's like, I don't even know what I want to do. And then getting into hospital, I was like, oh, I work retail and shit. And I was like, kind of might be the same thing. And then it's like, completely different when you got a bunch more people rocking in at once and you got all functions and stuff. But
yeah,
I did fall in love with, I was like, oh, maybe I am skillful at this and listening and making people feel good. It's like, I don't know if many people, you rock up to work and whatever for a lot of casual jobs, but when you really think about it and you're like, you can actually make a big impact on people's lives. And like the whole thing is, yes, you might have great products and great this, but it's got to be matched with the experience and people feeling seen and the love as well.
So much, man. I think we might have a similar experience, because I literally came back from Canada working in hospo and I was like, all right, I got to take this. I got to, you know, I was working, running a kitchen when I was maybe 19, and I moved to Canada and I was running like a kitchen on a ski hill. And it was awesome. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh yeah, this is just what I do when I travel. I'll have to go back and, you know, I got to grow up at some point and get a career. And then I went home and then it was just like one of those things. I was like, hang on, how do I make this a career? Cause I love this. Like whether I'm on a ski hill or I'm on the Central Coast, it's like, it's actually something that I really enjoy. But yeah, it's like, it's a fundamental skill set of like communication. I will honestly, if there's a thing in the specialty coffee industry of like specialty coffee service, and they're like, oh, it's got to be this amazing bean and all this stuff. Like, to me, it's actually a service more than a product. The product has to be good, but if you give me the best product in the world and you're turning your nose at me and making me feel like I don't know what I'm talking about, or making me feel like I'm less than, I'm like, nah, keep your $100 coffee, I'm out. You gotta take care of like the customer experience part of it for me.
Let's fast forward now and talk about what you're doing with SquareX and Green Square. How did that journey start? How did that opportunity come up, and how did you... how's it been the early stages of building this out, which is, I know we can get into a little bit more. And if those who have caught the LinkedIn live with our demos that we did with you and the boys, with sharing a little bit more about a showcase about the product, and excited for us to be working together and doing some cool stuff over the next little bit with the Dream Big Social Club as well. So just keen to unpack your pathway into that, and how did that actually begin for you?
Yeah, so like for me, it was wild. So like obviously I was running the business with my brothers and sisters. We had that little cafe, and it, you know, it's a bit of a long story, but it gives a bit of context hopefully. So we got that cafe and we basically started to run it. It was doing pretty well. It was we were in a town where there wasn't another cafe. Like there's like five cafes in the same street that we were now, but it was at the time where we were competing with a Michelle's patisserie up the road, and that was it. So like we were pumping. And we were young kids and we were energetic and we wanted to work. So we leased the building next door, knocked down, it was like a 30-seater cafe into a 120-seater cafe, massive commercial kitchen, and then took on another, like we opened two or three businesses off the back of it, grew really quickly because banks would lend us money. Like we'll turn it over, you know, we hit the $1 million revenue and we're like, man, look at this. Let's give us money. Let's do stuff. And then we realized, oh, okay, these other businesses are actually leeches on the good business. Like we have to build the, you know, actually work back. So we learned a lot of lessons and had to like redo that. But in that process was when I did the transition from like kind of on the kitchen side of things to the front of house. And then I fell in love with coffee from the sense that I'm not a crew, like maybe I am, but I don't feel like I'm a very like creative person. I can't play any instruments, you know, I can't paint or draw anything, but I did like a love heart and a coffee one day after watching something on YouTube, and I was I would have the biggest punish for my brothers and sisters. I was like, everyone, look at this. I'm amazing. Everyone get in line. I'm doing love hearts. Like, I'd never felt creative. And I was like, oh, I can be creative doing this. This is insane. So I fell in love with it, went down a rabbit hole. And then I kind of realized that the way we were serving our coffee wasn't any thought in it. We were just serving coffee. Whatever the supplier that talked to us 10 years ago or whenever it was, that's who we were serving. And we weren't thinking about what we were doing or why. So my brothers and sisters gave me some runway. I actually reached out to some people in the coffee industry and was just like, hey, I want to build my own coffee blend. Who's going to do it for me? Found some people, got to do it. Long story short, I built my coffee blend and then I realized, I was like, I like doing this more than I actually like working here. So I stepped out of the business and went and started roasting. So I found a gap in the market where these guys were willing to train me, and coffee roasting is, at the time, it's a lot better now, but it was this big wizardry of like how to roast coffees. There's this dude with a beard and smoke and mirrors and tattoos, and no one knows how to do it. But from my background as cooking, we were just cooking. There's a structure to this. I can learn how to cook. I managed to cook in some fine dining restaurants while I was traveling because you know the functions, you know how to do it. So yeah, I just applied that to coffee roasting, and like, it was insane how quickly I got to rise in that area. And it was awesome because there was like this crowd of cool people, and I was like, I want to be like those dudes. So I worked really hard, and there's no barriers in our industry. And because of the background I had and the work ethic that was instilled in me by my family working from such a young age, I like was so lucky to move really quickly. Like, I was roasting for Australia's first ever barista world champion within a couple of years. I was consulting for like people who were going directly into supermarkets with like different how to build their blends and all this stuff. And it was like 2 years ago, I was washing up dishes 3 days a week. And I was like, oh, okay, I can get good at this. And this industry is awesome. But then I realized I got into this crowd and it was just a lot of people in circles in this part of the coffee industry that were telling each other how cool they were. And they weren't really talking to the Caleb of 2 years ago. And they weren't really, there wasn't really an infrastructure to help those people. So I made a decision after spending a couple of years doing that and having this moment of realizing I was lucky to get here. Sure, I worked really hard. Sure, I got really good at it. But there was a lot of sliding doors moments that allowed me to get this opportunity. So I wanted to try and do things to allow more accessibility to in every part of the coffee industry. So it was when that I made that decision of stop being a sideline player, you know, having a job and having a safe paycheck isn't going to cut it, and it wasn't satisfying for me. So then I started to go out and try and build things to allow more people access to our industry. So it went off in a bunch of different ways. I launched a communal roasting and education facility in Sydney, and yeah, it was awesome. It was the worst time ever to launch a communal facility. It was about, I think it was about 18 months in, and we got told we can't commune. Like, there was a pandemic just hit us out of nowhere, and it's pretty wild. But it was at that time I had two business ideas. One was a communal roasting facility, and one was it shouldn't be so hard to buy coffee. That was the idea. I don't know, like, buying green coffee was really hard, and I built some cool spreadsheets, and I was kind of good at it because I like numbers. But I was like, I can't really give these spreadsheets to people. Like, I'd consult with someone, or I'd have a mate who's starting a roastery. I'd be like, here's a spreadsheet, but then they'd struggle to use it because it's really not intuitive, and it's really hard to build that understanding. But yeah, I had these two concepts, had a crack at it. The first one didn't come to fruition. We had to wrap it up. You lose a bit of money, you lick your wounds, you learn your lessons. And then I realized, okay, well, let's look at this digital side of it. What can we do here? I had, like, it always feels funny to say, but I think I built a bit of a good reputation in the industry as someone who was, you know, a bit of a, like a curator. It was the name of my business, but I think I did build that of like, Caleb will find a way to do it and he'll bring people together. And there were some guys who were kicking around an idea, some German dudes kicking around an idea about a digital coffee platform or a digital platform. And I'd mentioned my idea to someone and they'd mentioned theirs to the same person. I can't even remember who the person is. I probably owe him a case of beer, but they said, oh, you need to talk to Caleb. He's the guy. Like, you guys will get on. And then that's how I met Chris Meyer, who's one of my co-founders, who's based in Sydney with me. And him himself and Marius and Jan, who are our other co-founders based in Germany, had been from the outside in looking at the coffee industry and just being like, this needs software. We don't know what software, but they had a unique skill set between them with full stack developers, you know, working on like digitizing non-digital industries for the German government from Jan, Chris having a behavioral economics degree, like lecturing on all these things and realizing we love coffee. We have our day jobs and our careers, but we think there's something in the coffee industry that could be done. And put our heads together and realize that there is a real opportunity for a dedicated software provider for this space. And that's where we founded SquareX Innovations and Green Square, and building, you know, B2B marketplaces for non-standardized organic products.
Mate, I'll tell you what I really like about you. It's always stood out since we first started chatting, is that you leave a lot of, you're quite flexible in the fact that you leave room for opportunity and you just do things. And now unpacking your story and hearing like how many different stuff, not in a bad way, like you've just, you've taken opportunities, you've learned so many different things. Whereas like we talk to a lot of people and sometimes they don't have maybe like that battle scars or the experience to do new things and learn new skills that goes along with it. Like the fact that you've rattled off all these things that you've been involved in, and then the one that you're doing now, like it's a tech startup. What is it? It's still got people and there's a lot of stuff involved, but you're moving into a platform now where, like, if I'm hearing right, you might have liked numbers there, but you're not on the keys coding and that. You've just said, I'm involved in a tech startup and I'm doing it. So like, what's been like the learning curve being involved in a business like this?
Yes. So for me, man, it's like I realize that it's like a self-awareness, and I don't know, I have like, there's a layer of insecurity to it. So I'll always say it out loud because it always feels a little bit insecure because the next part I'm going to say sounds a bit cocky. But it's like I realized what I was good at and what I wasn't good at. And working, like being in a family of five, you see all different personality types and all different skill sets. And because we weren't just a family, we were also like business owners. We got to see how we could get the best out of each part of our skill set and each part of our personality. So I kind of realized pretty early that like know what you're good at. And do that and always be willing to learn, but don't be afraid to bring people in and don't be afraid to work with others. So my skill set was, if you haven't been able to tell by now, my old man was a politician. So we talked about my mum, but my old man was an independent politician. Gosford City Council's longest serving mayor, Chris Holstein. God love him. But yeah, so like I just had this knack of being able to talk to people and communicate.
Did he make you call him the mayor?
Yeah.
No. If I was to be honest, if I was the mayor, I'd be making Matilda call me the mayor.
Yeah, you ice cream tonight, Matilda?
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
No, but like it was just one of those things. I realized that literally, like, we'd just go to events. Like he's doing like, you know, ceremonies for people to get citizenship, and he's talking to this big group of people, and like you're just there as a kid watching him do this stuff, and you don't realize it, but communication's so important. And I remember how he would make people feel. So someone would come up to him to talk to him about something and they'd always leave happy. And I was like, wow, like how do you can really affect them and you can really influence them to have a night, like, you know, just to make them feel good or make them feel heard, especially if the, you know, people are yelling at him about stuff. Why didn't I get curb and guttering? And he's like, oh, and he makes them feel heard and understood and like leave in a better mood than when they started the conversation.
I feel like there's heaps of things you could learn from politicians and you like having firsthand experience, like to be able to settle people down, like problem solving. Yeah. That's a lot of what we do. And if you can do that, and if you're working with teams and collaborating with people, it is so important. I remember I can't remember who the politician was, but it's like, he always remembered people's names, you know? And it's like, cause that's the first, if you can remember their name after years and years and years, they'll talk about you forever.
I might be blowing up my dad's spot here, but I don't know what the demographic or audience crossover is going to be. But I remember I said to him once, I was like, how do you know? Like, I like thought he was the most amazing, but I was like, you know, everyone, like no one could walk up to him and he wouldn't interact with them. And I was like, how do you know them? He goes, I don't. And he had like a series of questions that he would ask them or like interact with them. They didn't realize that he'd be like, how you doing? What's been happening? So good. And he would have this series of questions. By the end of it, he'd know who they are. But he goes, it's my job I've got 60 seconds to figure out who they are and where I know them from. And he's like, if I don't get it, I've got to make them feel like I did. Do you know what I mean? So he was just amazing at it. And I was like, oh, okay. Like no one would come up and he goes, sorry, who are you? Like it was always a big, like, you know, kind of welcome gesture, which I thought was amazing. So there's probably some people out there who I've...
Now, if he listens to that, he's just going to be like, fuck, he's just giving away the secret herbs and spices.
He's actually the colonel.
But yeah, man. So like, I think the thing that I learned from that was communication. Like literally communication is to me, it's like a magic wand. If you can learn to communicate with people and to have like strong communication channels from business partners, colleagues, relationships, mates, life, then you can actually learn to be successful in anything you do. So the thing that I noticed was a lot of times I saw people talking at each other and not actually listening to each other. And it's like, it's sometimes there's scenarios where you have a conversation that looks like someone's like, they feel like they want to win the conversation. And it's like, if you can actually run a conversation to go, okay, what does this person need to win this conversation? Awesome. How do we find a mutual way that they feel like they've won the combo and we can keep rolling forward? And I realized that there's a level of skill and self-awareness in a conversation to try and make the person feel like they've won and they've got the result they wanted. They're feeling really good and actually then being able to produce that result for them. But yeah, I don't know. I think communication is like at the core of it.
Hey, you're in the middle of doing a capital raise and you've had your calendar back to back doing investor chats and chatting to people and storytelling and, like, can you take us through the experience for you going through this now? I know it's selling because you're doing a lot of the energy, you're a lot of the face, doing a lot of the storytelling aspect of what you're doing. For those who might be thinking about going through a capital raise process or have done one, can you sort of dive into a bit about your experience, learnings? How's the process been for you on top of normal lives? You still have to fucking run the business, you know?
yeah, man. It's like, honestly, it's wild. So if someone is listening to this that's going to do it, have a support network. You've got to have people around you. And it's a support network, whether you have like, I'm lucky to have co-founders, which is amazing. And there's so many scenarios in a day where I'm challenged by something that I'll approach one of the boys to talk about it or to talk through something. And it reminds me why I'm so lucky to have them, because it is a hardcore thing to do. But it's even the sense of like, I obviously living on Central Coast, I'll drive to Sydney for work. I work from home a lot now, but you know, still going down to Sydney for meetings a couple of times a week. And I've got an hour and a half drive and I know who's in my phone book that I can call to talk out stuff. So my little sister Biddy, if I want someone for a bit of support, who's going to always have my back. Awesome. If I want to be challenged and told to pull my head out, I'll call my mum, because she'll be like, nah, it's not that hard. You're doing good. Get over it. Get this done. So raising money was a whole new ballpark for me. And, you know, the market and the way it's kind of been in the last 12 months has been a pretty hectic time to raise money with the bear market that has been like just out there. But it's taught us so much about the importance of like, I guess it's the importance of it shouldn't be easy. It shouldn't be easy to raise money. Like if you're asking someone to invest, whether it's a VC, whether it's angel, whether it's, you know, a crowdfunding round, you should hold yourself to the highest standard to try and present to them, to try and ensure them that their money is actually going in the right direction. So yeah, the big thing for me was it's not a skill set that we had within our founding team. So we've been reaching out to people to learn and to kind of get better at understanding what's expected and what's required in that space. But yeah, it's like, I'd be lying if I said it was easy or if it was particularly fun. But it's super rewarding because it's a skill set that once again, once we've got that communication and we can actually start to understand, you know, the best way to present yourself and to share the journey of what you're doing and what you're building. It's super rewarding. Like getting off a call when someone's like, this is sick, we're in. I'm like, what? That's awesome.
You got to find your people too, because not everyone's going to get exactly what you're doing straight away. And like, it's not, you're solving, I think even when I first came across what you're doing, it's so much bigger than what just like, because Square X. And can you go into a little bit for people who are listening about the difference between Square X and Green Square?
Yeah, so SquareX is our parent company. SquareX is the company that we're raising funds for. So SquareX, we're raising funds. It owns the proprietary technology that we've built and designed ourselves. So this technology is creating a B2B procurement platform for organic products. So we are an ag tech company, which sounds weird to say for, you know, the way I describe it. I'm a overambitious dishwasher who's now founded an ag tech company. But it's one of those things that it's like, so SquareX, we made a decision very early, obviously with my expertise in the coffee sector and realizing the potential and the demand in this area. We did our due diligence to understand, you know, where is the demand in other organic products as well. And this was something that was really, I would have never done that without my co-founders. I would have never looked above the coffee parapet and I would have been head down, we're building this just for coffee. This is going to be sick. But the boys were like, well, let's take a step back and actually understand where we see the agricultural space moving and the demand that it has, because our CTO is not a coffee guy. So Marius, I love the guy, he's not a coffee guy. And it's so good to not have a coffee guy on our team. So he doesn't, like, he's like, we were in America together, I'm giving him these crazy coffees. I'm like, try this. He's like, yeah, tastes like brown water, like the last one. He wouldn't care if it was from a petrol station. Like, he's just, and it's awesome to have that because he looks at it so subjectively. There's no emotion. So he was a real driver behind us looking and going, okay, let's actually evaluate what's out there. So we've made our software suite that is agnostic to actually the product it's trading. So we're applying it with GreenSquare, which is 100% owned and operated by myself and the co-founders of SquareX Innovations. We've deployed it in the coffee space to show that this can actually work. It's not just a conceptual tool that we're telling people to use that doesn't actually have a user case. So we thought, what better user case than doing it ourselves in an industry that we have traction in and we have a level of expertise in, which is GreenSquare. But the core technology is agnostic to that. We have ongoing conversations with people from the grain sector. We were on a call a few weeks ago with someone who manages and distributes fruit and veg in North America, and about the way that they actually have to do that. We've noticed a lot of people, because transparency on any consumable organic product is only getting bigger at the moment. There's new laws that are coming into Europe at the moment about deforestation, which is going to greatly affect the coffee sector. They're looking, I believe it's 2026, where they're going to have, their goal is to have no products on grocery shelves that are contributing to deforestation in Europe. And that's hard if you're trying to track all these individual siloed products that are managed in very manual and siloed environments. So their demand for a digital foundation to be able to have visibility and transparency across this is just booming at the moment. So yeah, it's really exciting. We're very conscious about how we approach these things. So we're very conscious that we've seen other startups get distracted of they release a technology and then everyone goes, oh, that's cool. And they do 20 things at once and they actually spread themselves too thin. So we're very conscious that we're focused on solidifying our growth in green coffee and in the coffee sector and building out that arm of the business. But we're also not limiting ourselves to license and collaboration opportunities in other organic products, I guess.
I think you were just reading my mind, and that was going to be my follow-up question, was about like how much time do you dedicate to the long-term vision and GreenSquare, you know, because it is hard when you're building two things out. I know for a fact with us, it's can sometimes be a bit confusing with what you're building because there's so many different elements and parts. But in terms of your diary and splitting up your week, how do you go about actually doing that?
So we're really lucky that we have a diverse team. So the fact that we have certain parts of our team won't ever touch certain parts of our business because we have really well structured roles. So all of the high level conversations with other markets is managed by our CEO and my co-founder, Chris Meyer. He will handle all of that and those high-level conversations. There will be scenarios where he'll go, hey, I'm going to bring Caleb in to give you guys some context around, you know, how we can actually work. Because, you know, I'm starting to realize I have a unique skill set about actually problem solving a lot of these communication channels that they have in different sectors. So I can kind of come in and say, hey, here's all your communication friction points that I can see from our learnings. And here's how we see a software solution for that. So I swing in for the last little bit to kind of, you know, show them through what a live action version of it is with GreenSquare and to kind of point out where I can see friction in their kind of market base. But largely it's managed by Chris and different members of our team. So, you know, we don't we don't spread ourselves too thin in that sense.
Hey, what about working as an international team on all hours of the clock?
The international man of mystery. Do you have all the clocks up in the house with all the different time codes?
Yeah, I actually have a watch on Berlin time. So I have my smartwatches on Aussie time and then on Berlin time because my colleague Jan and I speak daily. So he's actually been off. He's been on leave for a week, and I'm seeing him tonight for the first time. So you know, I'm a little bit excited. But yeah, man, it was one of those things at the start. We honestly were like, is this going to be hard? Like, is this going to be, you know, is this going to be possible for us to even do this? But it was one of those things that the mentality we brought to it is, how do we turn this into an advantage? So yes, okay, we're 16. I Googled it the other day. We're 16,000 kilometers away from each other. How do we turn this into an advantage? What are the benefits of this? So we have what I describe, and, you know, it might be a little bit markety, but we have a 23-hour workday. How many startups do you know that have 23 hours of their founding team on the tools, building something and working it? So we learned to actually turn that into a really positive scenario. So we don't have to work consecutively and side by side with this. So obviously Marius and Jan being in Germany can work together and be really dynamic. Myself and Chris in Sydney can work together, but we have these handovers at the start and end of every day to actually be able to work more efficiently. So the boys, we will go, hey, we're looking at this. Can you update or design something for us? They'll design or work on it overnight, send it back to us. You know, if there's any updates or design things, it's really dynamic to be working that way. It has massive challenges. Like I never met, so I started a business with these guys and I never met them for like 3 years until March this year when we met in America.
How was it? Was it like catfish a little bit? Were you like, oh, you're taller than I thought? And hello.
It was so weird because it was like seeing an old friend and you kind of forgot what they looked like. But I was like, it was honestly the weirdest thing. But it was amazing because we already had a relationship. So it was just like ground up. We were ready to go. And the way I always describe it, and part that I found for me was really cool, is like, on paper, I should be totally intimidated, one, to talk to any of these guys because of their skill sets and they're qualified in all these things. Like we've sat in meetings with investors and VCs where everyone goes around the room and says their skill set. And they're like, oh, I studied here and I did this and I did this. And I realized I think I have a pen license. I don't know if it's still valid, but I've got a pen license. Like that's my only qualification. But meeting the
boys. Don't have to sell yourself, brother. I reckon they'd be looking at you going, in terms of storytelling and all that sort of stuff, bro, and you bring so many different strengths. I like how you're trying to frame it, but hang on. There's no cockiness here. It's just about being real. You're very fucking switched on. I feel like that's what makes you guys cool and special, is you are all different. And I feel like with us, we know that we can't do it without each other. So it was always like, you know, always in the back of our head, it's like, they're that way, you're that way for a reason, I'm this way for a reason, but together it sort of evens everything out.
You boys are too nice, because I always use that. That's my qualifier before I then get really cocky about my skills. So I was about to come in and tell you guys how good I am and all the things I'm killing it at. But I always have to qualify it. It's the joys of being in a big family. You got to, you know, qualify it, but all the way, I'm really good at this stuff. But yeah, man, it was epic seeing the boys, meeting, like Marius blows my mind. Marius is a full stack developer, literally like, if you picture a hacker like in your head, that's what this dude is. And like watching him design and build things and actually like seeing how he does it was just, I couldn't believe. I was like, I'm not going to be able to have a conversation with this dude. Like we're from different worlds. And me and him got on like a house on fire. And we actually like working, like being together for that week, we learned so much more about ourselves that now our workflow's improved again because we can communicate really quickly on things. So yeah, it's amazing.
Mate, question we ask all our guests, a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
Oh, I guess like I love music. I listen to heaps and heaps of music. Like I'd say golf, but I'm horrible at it. So it's more spending time with my mates. It's a reason to go, you know, walk around for 3.5 hours with my mates and try and hit a white ball, but I'm horrible. So.
What about like switching off though? Like, I mean, like you're working all these crazy hours, like 23 hours, like switching off and knowing like, hey, maybe I just need to watch a bit of the OC or One Tree Hill or something like that. I'm trying to think of like wholesome TV shows, you know, like real innocent things where you're just like, I can tell you, you're so it's like us, we're so passionate about it, but it's like sometimes it can just, you're always on and high energy. What do you do when you can just like click the gear down?
Is that Chad Michael? Yeah.
Actually, it's so funny because me and my wife started watching the OC again the other day. I don't know if it's just in the algorithm that it popped back up, but we literally started watching it again the other day. But yeah, no, I'm really lucky. Like my wife has a business. So like, it sounds silly, but my downtime is helping her. Do you know what I mean? So like, she'll be like, oh, I'm working on this. Can you help? Or, you know, she just wants to talk about what she's working on and have someone to listen to that. So like, for me, that's it. Or
that's crazy, bro. What does she do?
So she runs her own coffee roasting company. So she has a coffee roaster on the Central Coast. It was awesome because we kind of started with the first project that was in Marrickville, was about the communal facility that I was running. She kind of had, you know, she was really supportive, had a full-time career and basically allowed me to not have an income while I did that. And then when I had to wrap that up and move forward, it was the opportunity for us to actually invest in her dream. So that's what she's doing now. And she's built out a coffee roaster and cafe up on the Central Coast. And she's charging away. So, yeah.
Was it love at first sip? I mean, are you always talking about coffee? You're going through the beans and that. Love
at first sip.
Did you make a coffee for her? She was just like, wow.
The love heart.
Kiss the barista.
That was the love heart. Yeah, no. Well, yeah, no. So it's a bit sappy, but we're high school sweethearts. So so we went to high school together and just like, yeah, we've been together for since we're like 17, and we traveled the world. Like we moved to Greece and we worked over there for a bit, but she was never into hospitality. And then started to get into it. We were in London and I was working in a cafe and they were like, oh, we need a barista. I was managing. And I was like, yep, sweet. I got someone. She didn't know how to make coffee. So I trained her. And then, the joke is she got better at making coffee than me. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go learn how to roast. I got to go do something else. So she's an amazing barista. She got into like coffee technician. So she was like fixing coffee machines, working for so like big companies when we came back home. And then the next joke is now she actually is roasting and I'm not roasting anymore. So I was like, she got better at roasting than me. So I've got to go start a tech company. So look out for Alicia's tech company in a couple of years. It'll probably be better than mine as well.
That's crazy.
Mate, we got you on to be the coffee expert. Our next question
is we'll get number two.
The next question is literally coffee deep dive.
For the average Joe who's making their coffee every morning, what are some tips to, you know, have a better cup of Joe?
Yeah, so the first one would be where do you buy your coffee? So it's super important. Like, there is some amazing coffee that is getting on the shelves of supermarkets now. Like there's some crew out of Melbourne that are getting some good stuff. The DC guys are on supermarkets. I think they're even national now, or at least on the East Coast. Traditionally, it used to be if it was supermarket coffee, it wasn't great, but they're improving. Like Campos is getting in there now. Like there's some good brands starting to get into supermarkets, but just be sure that you can find a coffee that you know who roasted it and you know when it was roasted is a really good thing. So if it's got a little date on there, you know that you're in for a good step. And then in preparing it, if you can have a grinder to grind it fresh, it's a little bit of an extra expense, but Sunbeam, you know, Breville, they're all rocking those little $1,000 machines that have a grinder in it. They're 100% worth it. And then, yeah, just those couple of things, knowing where you get your coffee, knowing if it's, you know, been roasted within the last month, or was it at least roasted in Australia. If it's not roasted in Australia, you're going to be up against getting a good shot out of it. And then grinding it fresh to order, you'll be good. So.
How do you get the silky milk? Because I remember when I was pumping out the coffees for the people who were playing in the gaming hall, because we just have to pump them out because I was spending cash. I got a bit good at it, but like getting the milk silky smooth took the longest amount of time for me.
Locke rates himself as a coffee maker. And the truth is, I don't know if I rate him.
Yeah. I'll have to do a lesson when I'm down in Melbourne or something for you, mate. We'll have to do a workshop.
I'm keen, bro. I'm keen. But like silky milk though, like that's important. If you want a better coffee, that's the thing, isn't it?
It's all like you can kind of work off it from sound. So you think about it, like if this is your steam wand, this little pen, it might be blurred out. You want the bottom of your steam wand to just be under the surface of the milk, and you want to have it on a slight angle so the milk's whipping. So it's constantly moving. And the first, it changes a little bit on domestic machines, but it's probably about 6 to 10 seconds. You want it to sound like little hisses. So it's like of just a little bit of air incorporating to it. So as that air incorporates and pulls and starts to move the milk around, it's creating what we call like a microfoam. And that microfoam is where you get a nice texture all the way through it. The other part of it is after you've steamed it, if you've let in too much air or you haven't whipped it enough, you'll see some big bubbles on the surface. You just give it a little tap on the bottom of your bench. That will pop out. You might get a, you know, bit of splashback from it. And then a big swirl, and you just combine all that microphone back together. So that's like a good little trick, is 6 to 10 seconds of hissing, and then try and have the milk rotating the whole time it's in the jug.
And if it's a cappuccino and you want a bit extra froth, you just leave a bit more air, is it? So froth it up a bit more?
Just a little bit more air. The trick is, though, majority of cafes won't steam your milk different for any coffee now. It's all one way. I'm blowing up everyone's spot, but if you're doing flat whites, lattes, cappuccinos, it's usually about the vessel and the way that you pour can actually change how much foam comes out now as well.
How do you do that? How do you pour it differently to make sure?
So you think about it like you're trying to combine it so it's all even, but the slower you pour, the more will come off the top of the surface, which is the heavier part of the foam. So you'll have a foamier beverage. The faster you pour kind of changes it.
You had a couple of questions too to ask your barista when you need to learn about what to ask to make sure you're getting the right coffee.
100%. So like I didn't realize it until a few years ago. There was like a cool coffee shop opened in Sydney, and a mate of mine was like, oh, let's go for a coffee. Let's go to this place. And I was like, sick. Like, you know, he wants to hang out. That's nice. I feel nice. This is good. And it turns out he was just embarrassed, because he's like, if they ask me a question, I don't know how to answer, but I know you'll know how to answer. And it was that sense that like sometimes coffee can be intimidating, and we don't mean to. Like a lot of people in our industry are like awesome, excited, passionate people, but we can be a bit intense. If I haven't come across as intense yet, I'm sure, you know, it can be a bit intense about our coffee when we go into our rabbit hole. So some really cool things to ask if you're buying from a roaster or from a cafe that's selling their beans over the counter. First of all, do that, because literally I can tell you every business owner or every small cafe that sells coffee over the counter, they'll high five every time someone buys a kilo. Because in a kilo, that's like serving 40 flat whites. So you buy a kilo off and they're like, yeah, sick, that's awesome. So buy the coffee off them and then ask them about how they make their coffee. So they'll straight away be able to give you some tips, and they talk about recipes. It's like baking, you know, how much flour, how much salt, how much sugar. I'm sure there's other things in baking. I clearly was not a good baker. But it's about like they'll tell you some time frames. So like when the coffee should start to fall out, and then how long you should be letting it run for. So like, okay, give it about 6 seconds and it should start to fall out of the portafilter. So that's when you know you've got a good size, or maybe it's going to run till about 30 seconds and you're going to be good. They'll even go into more things of, you know, getting into rabbit holes. But if you just ask them, hey, what's the recipe I should use for this coffee? They'll give you some guidelines and advice. And yeah, honestly, they love doing it. As soon as you ask for a little bit of help, you'll see them light up and you've got them. They're all yours.
It's funny, every time I go in and I ask for the beans and they grind it for me, because Tal's my partner, she just has the espresso beans, and it's just like a bit of a pain in the ass every morning. And he's asking, do you use the V60 or whatever it is? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, do you just pour it for yourself? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, so he just knows the grind amount, or I suppose, or like how fine
you grind literally it. Just like they'll ask you a couple of questions like about your machines. So like, what are you using? Okay, do you use this machine or do you use an AeroPress or the? And then they actually change the size, and it gets super nerdy. But we talk about like particle size distribution. So it's like, what size are the particles and how many are there? And we literally measure this stuff. Like I've been trying to be as normal as I can to not get into rabbit holes, but like literally we'll grind it to different sizes because the amount of contact time with water is how much it'll extract. And we know these things, like all your roasters and baristas will know these different things of, we need more fine grinds to extract more of these flavors, or we need more coarse grinds to extract these. And it changes from coffee to coffee, origin to origin, roast to roast, season to season. Like they account for everything. So it's crazy.
What about you just interacting, like, because you love these things, yeah? And I'm sure when you go into normal cafes and they don't normally, they might not do it like that. Like, how do you see those sort of
situations? I was like watching a bat, like being an advertisement, watching the ads, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, don't do it like that.
It's one of those things that I actually, like, I'm the easiest coffee customer to please. So I have, my thing's always context. So what are they trying to achieve? So if they're trying to give me the most exceptional coffee in the world, and then that's what I'll evaluate it to. But if they're just trying to make me a wicked cappuccino with two sugars, and they're just like, yeah, I'm just making you a cap with two sugars, awesome. So my thing is, and because I was a business owner and I understand their challenges, I'm very sympathetic from the sense of like, it's not about us trying to correct them or change them. It's about them just knowing what their targets are and what their goals are. And if we can make our, like, if I walk into a cafe and they're screeching milk and they're, you know, and it is what it is, and it's like, sweet, I just change my expectations for what I'm going to have. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not there to change that. Like, they didn't ask me to come in and tell them what to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have a business, they're doing their thing, and it's awesome. If they want help, there's so many good people in our industry to get help from. But my thing is, yeah, I'm the biggest. I'll never go back. If someone asks for feedback, I usually won't give it. And then they'll have to ask like two or three times. And I'm like, you really want it? Okay, cool. Well, there's it. And I try and be as constructive as possible. But yeah.
You need to know if they can take it. So if they're genuinely asking and you go to a place and they pride themselves on coffee, it's like we welcome feedback from people who we respect, you know, where 100%. It's like, hey, if you're going to give a thing, it's uncomfortable sometimes to give honest feedback. So you got to remember, they're probably only doing it to help you, not like hurt you, but it's 100%. Comms, bro. It's comms.
Exactly. But it also comes into it where it's like, you go into a cafe and it's like, is my ego wanting to tell them why I know more than them? Do they even want to hear this? So, or like, who's this servicing? Am I trying to help them? Or am I trying to give my ego a little puff to go, I know how to steam milk. Look at me. most of the time it's actually servicing my ego, not them. You know what I mean?
There's like, so many people like that though, bro. Like where it's just that you don't think about others and it's like, that person's probably just 16 working their job. They don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
100%. And it's like, and then this is where, and I think our industry, like the coffee sector of hospitality has this prejudice of, you know, the hipster douchebag. Like we have amazing people in our industry, but we get so excited and so passionate about these things that we've learned that we go into a cafe and we're like, oh, you're doing a double ristretto. Actually, you shouldn't do that because you should do this. And why aren't you? And then we just like dump on this person who's like, dude, you don't know what's going on in my world. You don't know what's up with this. Like, I'm just making lattes. You know what I mean? Like it's.
I feel like that's the same in like self-help and shit too, bro. You know what I mean? When you discover a new skill or whatever, and you're like, how can nobody else see this? Like this is such a thing. You know what I mean? You get so excited and passionate, but it's like, you got to remember that you're on your journey too. You know what I mean? Like it's the start of your journey. You can pump the brakes of it, you know?
This is the guy who's been telling you about Scribe for the last 4 weeks, trying to get everyone to use it. I hold back on my my coffee feedback, but if I find a new software tool, I'm telling every man and his dog about it.
You were selling the other day, that's for sure.
Hey, I just downloaded a new one today. I was like, it's ridiculous. I can't hold back on that. I've got no restraint.
I like that. Well, mate, we're just over halfway through the year. What are you excited about for the rest of this year?
Yeah, man, that's crazy. Like, I don't know. It's this year has flown by. The joys of launching. So we launched our platform in late Feb this year. So we're coming up. I think it'll be like, you know, end of August. We're going to be at the 6 month mark, which is insane. So we're just doing some like reports about things we've learned, things like that. Like at our 6 month mark, we just started to look back on our targets. We were like, oh, if we could get like 80 roasters registered in Australia and like 4 to 5 sellers, that'd be sick. We've got over 240 roasters registered. We've got like 11 sellers and there's like more waiting and it's like blown me away. So I don't even know what to expect for the next 6 months off the back of this 6 months, but we're going to close this round, which is super exciting. We've got a crowdfunding round that we've mentioned at the moment, but closing out this round and actually kind of building out on the traction we've got so far on the platform. We're coming into like new harvest. So towards the end of the year, we're going to see all the Central Americans, Central and South American coffees coming in into season. So having all those new coffees. So every time we get to a new harvest where our system's developed more and grown more and our customer base has grown more. So seeing how we can interact with them there is super exciting. So yeah, I'm pumped for the next harvest out of South and Central America and seeing all those coffees hit Green Square and everyone interact with them.
Well, mate, this chat's been unreal. And if people want to go and search a little bit more, I know Lachlan will have everything in the show notes because that's what
I do,
that's
mate.
What he does.
Yeah.
Hey, but how can they find and learn more about what's going on? Where can you send them?
Yeah. So Green Square's LinkedIn, greensquare.co is our LinkedIn domain, whatever they call it. I don't know how that works. We're also on Instagram. I'm also shouting about it on all my socials. So Caleb Holstein and all that jazz, you'll find me. And then, just reach out. I'm always, if you haven't realized, I'm always up for a chat. And we can learn more about what we've been up to.
Love it, brother. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on.
Cheers, boys. Thanks for having me.
So fun.